Hey folks, this is Tom Castles, former host of Databook. I just wanted to drop in for a second to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by InterSystems, the engine behind the world's most important healthcare applications. So here's the deal. InterSystems is all about helping you overcome the challenges of modern healthcare. Their advanced software solutions can help your health system transform care processes for moving to value-based care, managing population health, engaging patients, and so much more. It's all driven by a simple mission: to empower care providers and connect care communities around clearly presented, easy-to-use, and comprehensive health information. I think we can all agree that our industry needs innovation. So that's why I encourage you to take the next step today. Reach out to InterSystems on Twitter or LinkedIn, or visit them online at intersystems.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Databook. My name is Samara Rosenfeld, and today I will be speaking with Paul Serrato, former editor of Information Week Healthcare. Paul has more than 30 years of experience working as a research analyst, medical journalist, clinician, and educator, and has written extensively on clinical decision support, electronic health records, protected health information security, and practice management. His latest book, Reinventing Clinical Decision Support, is co-authored by Dr. John Halamka, the president of the Mayo Clinic Platform. In part one of our two-part podcast, we will discuss his newest book, The Cause of Diagnostic Errors, and how machine learning can improve patient outcomes.
I am here today with Paul Serrato, the former editor of Information Week Healthcare, and just someone who's been in this healthcare, health tech space for many, many years. How are you, Paul?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
You know, you have this new book out with Dr. John Halamka, Reinventing Clinical Decision Support, and you've had some HIMSS lectures about clinical decision support. Why this intense focus on this topic?
One of the things that really got us thinking about this is the statistics on diagnostic errors. If you look at the numbers, between 12 million and 18 million adults a year in the United States experience some sort of diagnostic error. That's a huge number. And if you break it down, about between 500,000 and 1 million of these diagnostic errors result in serious life-threatening consequences. There's at least three categories where you have to worry. One is cancer, the other is vascular diseases, and the other is infection. So these are three of the main reasons why diagnostic errors are so dangerous. If you look at specifically what we're talking about when we talk about diagnostic errors, there's at least four main categories or buckets, so to speak. One is a missed diagnosis, the other is an incorrect diagnosis, and the third one is a delayed diagnosis, and the last problem is overdiagnosis. And all four of those can put patients in serious jeopardy, and we're really talking about a lot of misery here. So ideally, clinical decision support tools, if they are reinvented or reimagined, have the potential to significantly address the problem.
Why cancer, vascular diseases, and infections?
Probably because those are the most common areas where clinicians make mistakes. To give you an example, you go to a physician and let's say you have bleeding in the stool. So the physician might make a misdiagnosis and say, well, it's probably just hemorrhoids or something not serious. And if he or she misses the possibility that this could be colon cancer, they won't refer you to a gastroenterologist to have testing done. Similarly, if a woman has, let's say, a lump in her breast and the physician says, well, it's probably just a cyst or something benign, and doesn't recommend you to have more testing done, then it's easy enough to risk or miss a cancer diagnosis. And then it's similar with vascular diseases. Stroke is easily mimicked, and it's easy to misdiagnose stroke as something less severe, and similarly, it's easy to misdiagnose a serious infection for something minor. So those are the three areas where the experts say you're most likely to have a misdiagnosis. So those are the areas that need to have the most attention paid to them during the diagnostic process.
So how can technology transform the way that clinicians are managing patients?
Well, before you think about how these tools can improve the diagnostic process, you really have to look at what's causing the diagnostic errors. Throughout the research for the book, we found a long, long list of possible causes for diagnostic errors. Things like lab testing errors, badly designed electronic health records, even something as obvious as a noisy environment where the physician or the nurse is making a diagnosis. You know, if it's very noisy or there's a lot of distractions, it's very easy to overlook some subtle sign or symptom. And also the fact that the diagnostic process, if it's for a complicated disease, is a complicated thinking process. You really need a certain amount of quiet and a certain amount of focus. And the more distracting the environment is where you're making the diagnosis, the more likely you are to make a mistake. But if you were to divide all of the diagnostic errors into two separate categories, they fall into two buckets. One is considered a system-based error, and the other is cognitive errors. So in the area of cognitive errors, we're talking about some of the reasoning mistakes that physicians and nurses make. There's actually a list of about 30 different reasoning errors that clinicians can make, things like an anchoring error or a confirmation error, different ways that clinicians can go in the wrong direction during the diagnostic process. For example, racial bias is one possibility, or bias towards a certain group in society. Let's say a patient comes into the ER and looks disheveled and maybe smells of alcohol. It's easy to jump to the conclusion that their problem is alcoholism and cirrhosis, whereas it might be something more complicated than that. So cognitive errors is one of the common reasons why diagnoses are incorrect. The broader area, what's sometimes referred to as system-based errors, part of that problem is something called not closing the loop. So there are about 100 million referrals from primary care physicians to specialists. But unfortunately, the research shows that only about 50% of those referrals are actually completed. Now, once again, there's lots of reasons why that happens. Often it's poor communication between the primary care office and the specialist office. These days, a lot of offices are still in the dark ages. They're still using faxes, and faxes have lots of deficiencies. So you send a fax and it gets stuck in somebody's inbox and never reaches the physician. That's a possibility. Essentially, there's no one really held accountable for the referral process, and for that reason, a lot of patients fall through the loops. Another thing, a lot of specialists complain that they don't get a full description of what the patient's problem is. So they may get his name, phone number, contact information, but they don't get the patient's records and an explanation of why they need a referral. So it's easy for a specialist to jump to the conclusion, well, really, this is not necessary. Let's put this on the back burner because they don't have all the details. So once again, a communication problem. Other issues that can affect misdiagnosis, electronic health records workflow problems. Almost every physician you talk to these days complains about EHRs and all their deficiencies. Perhaps the most dramatic example of how EHRs can result in misdiagnosis is the story of the first Ebola patient who made it to the United States. There's an account, a patient comes from an African nation where Ebola was epidemic, goes to a ER in Texas, and the nurse who does the initial workup asks the most obvious question, what's your travel history? And of course he admits where he came from. Then later on down the line, the attending physician looks at the patient and looks at signs and symptoms and says, well, you've probably got sinusitis, and sends the patient home. And a couple of days later, he comes back to the ER seriously, seriously ill, and eventually dies in a few days. So they ask the physician, when the whole thing is over, so what happened? And he says, well, the patient's travel history never came up to the top of my problem list. So it was buried somewhere in the record, but it never came to my attention. So perfect example of how electronic health records, if they're not designed properly, can lead to misdiagnoses. So these are the kinds of issues that can be addressed with better electronic systems, better health, better clinical decision support tools, and the like.
Is any of that happening? Are health systems implementing these technologies to improve this?
Some of them are, yes. This is a work in progress. Some healthcare systems are creating what's called hard alerts versus soft alerts. So for instance, you're a clinician in an electronic health record, and something really, really important has to stand out. There's a hard alert that says essentially to the clinician, you can't do anything more until you address this problem. Something like a travel history to a country that has, you know, an epidemic, that has to show up as a hard alert. Whereas a soft alert would be something less important, perhaps an interaction between warfarin and another drug. Most physicians know the dangers of warfarin and, you know, what you have to avoid. So that might be lower down on the list of priorities. Docs complain a lot about what's called alert fatigue. I'm sure you've heard of that. They get so many, they get bombarded with so many alerts that they start to ignore them. So if you stratify the system so that the urgent alerts come to the very top of their attention, you're more likely to address the diagnostic mistake.
Which machine learning algorithms are playing a role here and are ready for prime time in patient care?
Good question. I'm sure a lot of your listeners know there's a lot of hype going on right now in machine learning and AI. It's the latest buzzword, and vendors, entrepreneurs are trying to jump on the wagon in the hope to, make a living. But sometimes there's not enough good science behind the products that they're creating. There are a couple of companies that have done the due diligence. They've taken the long view, and they've got a lot of good scientific support for their systems. A couple that come to mind, there's a company called Medial Early Sign, and I have no financial relationship with them. Medial Early Sign produces a algorithm called Colon Flag. And what Colon Flag does is it uses some very basic information that's available for almost every patient, the basic vital signs and their hemoglobin levels, and it uses that data to stratify patients' risk of colon cancer. So if your numbers suggest a low risk, then you're okay, and if it suggests a high risk and you're at a primary care doctor's office, he or she might say, okay, look at these results. This strongly suggests that you need to take it to the next level. You need to go to a gastroenterologist and have the colonoscopy done. This is not just me, the doctor, saying that you're over 50 and everybody over 50 should have it done, which is what the recommendations are. This is me saying there's a test result now that says you're in the high risk bracket. So this needs to be done. And the Colon Flag uses sophisticated machine learning tools in order to help make that screening decision. There's another company now that has FDA clearance called IDX. And IDX makes a combination of a retinal camera and a software program to help screen patients for diabetic retinopathy. So essentially, the clinician purchases the equipment. The patient puts their face in front of the camera, takes a picture, and then the software, which is based on convolutional neural networks, analyzes the picture, looks at all the very subtle changes in the photo, and makes a decision as to, yes, you're more likely to have retinopathy, or no, you're not, and you're at low risk. Then once again, if it's being used in a primary care doc's office, which is where it's intended, then the doc can say, okay, we know you have diabetes. We know diabetes increases the risk of eye disease. Now, this test strongly suggests that you have the disorder, so please make an appointment to see the ophthalmologist. So these things are working. They're being used in the field, and there's pretty good science behind them.
Yeah, and I mean, based off of what you said, these machine learning algorithms can really improve patient outcomes.
Yes, they can. Right now, there's some research to suggest that they are improving patient outcomes. Of course, realistically, we're still early in the era of machine learning. So eventually what the movers and shakers in medicine are looking for, those who really control academic medicine, they're looking for large trials that include thousands of patients and randomized clinical trials. There's one or two of them that are pretty small, though. So eventually we're going to need, you know, the full-scale scientific support. But right now, some of these tools look pretty promising. So we're optimistic. Dr. Halemko and I like to refer to ourselves as optimists, but not naive optimists, evidence-based optimists, because there is evidence to support these tools. It's just a question of being patient enough to wait for these very large trials to prove definitively that some of these tools work.
How long down the road do you think that might be?
That's a hard question to answer. I would say some of those tools are ready for use now. We just finished an article for the Journal of Family Practice, the November issue, and it's available on their website at no charge. And it talks about the two programs that we just mentioned, the medial early signs colon flag and the other tool for diabetic retinopathy. And they're being used commercially. And so, yeah, there's a small possibility that you're going to get false positives. You know, the test is going to say you have the disorder and you really don't. But the benefits right now probably outweigh the risks. And the only harm is, you know, you're going for a colonoscopy or you're going to have your eyes examined. So it seems like it's better to err on the side of caution and have those type of tests done. But when some of the shortcomings, some of the factors that will probably slow down the development and use for these programs are things like the fact that a lot of the studies are now retrospective rather than prospective. So we can get into that when there's more time. But there's also a problem of what's called the black box dilemma, where some of these programs are so complicated and they involve such mind-boggling mathematical equations that the average doctor or nurse is skeptical because they don't understand it. And like everybody else, you know, clinicians are human and they're inclined to disbelieve something that they don't fully understand. So that's something that we can get into in more detail.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for part one of this podcast featuring Paul Serrato. Paul, thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to hearing even more of your insights in 2 weeks.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Patient Experience Symposium is a one-of-a-kind conference that brings together leading stakeholders from across healthcare to improve and enhance patient experience. The most influential thought leaders, healthcare executives, clinical trial operators, and clinicians will come together in Massachusetts from May 11th to 13th to exchange game-changing ideas and actionable strategies to enhance patient experience in their healthcare ecosystems. The symposium features a new track, The Role of New Technologies in Healthcare, which will include a session titled Telehealth, Improving the Patient Experience and Enhancing Care, featuring Dr. Joseph Kvader, and Digital Therapeutics, Combining Technology and Evidence-Based Medicine to Transform Personalized Patient Care, featuring Megan Coder. Attendees will learn best practices and find answers to difficult patient experience issues and leave with the power to develop an unforgettable patient experience. To register and learn more, go to patientsymposium.com. Together, we're changing the face of patient experience. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Databook. As always, I'm your host, Samara Rosenfeld. Make sure you like this podcast, subscribe, and follow Inside Digital Health on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook to stay up to date on the latest health tech news. Also, feel free to follow me on Twitter, at RosenfeldSamara, and let me know what you want to hear on the upcoming episodes of the show.
Hey folks, this is Tom Castles, former host of Databook. I just wanted to drop in for a second to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by InterSystems, the engine behind the world's most important healthcare applications. So here's the deal. InterSystems is all about helping you overcome the challenges of modern healthcare. Their advanced software solutions can help your health system transform care processes for moving to value-based care, managing population health, engaging patients, and so much more. It's all driven by a simple mission: to empower care providers and connect care communities around clearly presented, easy-to-use, and comprehensive health information. I think we can all agree that our industry needs innovation. So that's why I encourage you to take the next step today. Reach out to InterSystems on Twitter or LinkedIn, or visit them online at intersystems.com.